Last time you were here, I think it was a couple of years ago.
Valediction, I think, was addiction. The last one I was here for.
You've been obviously keeping busy.
Yes.
So
slightly too busy.
What'd you have for lunch today?
A club sandwich.
What?
That doesn't sound right.
Well, on the book tour, one has to eat carefully and slowly, and not dine too often, too frequently, not drink at lunch, stuff.
No, you don't drink while you work.
I mean, I'd be taking a nap now if I had two martinis for lunch.
That's right.
How long have you been here to work?
I leave tomorrow. I'm going to do the Today Show tomorrow morning.
Oh.
And I'll be on live at 5 tomorrow afternoon, and then I take the train to Philly tomorrow night.
Boy, they got you all the big ones.
Do what they can, yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming in for this little one.
Well, this is pretty big. I hear you at home. Anything I can hear at home.
Well, yeah, I do get some response. You hear it on EI.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I do get some response there. Usually people who have written something.
Yes. Say, would you like me to come down and talk to you? It's probably what
I'll be delighted to spare my, send myself down to you in any way, shape, or form and appear if it'll help your broadcast. So, this here is number 13, Spencer, huh? Number 13, Taming a Seahorse?
Yep.
When are you going to run out of Spencer ideas?
Not before I die, I hope.
Not
the ideas aren't, they come, you know. If you can do it 13, you can do it 26.
Sure.
It's the trick of writing fiction. It's probably the only thing you really have to be able to do is think up the story. I mean, there are people who sell fiction who can't write very well, but there's nobody who sells fiction who can't think up a story. And I remember I used to teach fiction writing, and the kids would say, yeah, I can't think of anything. And I'd say, do something else. Because if you can't think of anything, it's going to be a long, hard life.
Now, Spencer appeared in the Godwolf manuscript
right.
in 1974. That was
right.
your first Spencer novel. That was a long time ago, 12 years ago. How has Spencer changed over the years?
I don't know how precisely he's aged. He knows things he didn't know in 1974. Probably responds more to complexity. Probably understands that the choices are more limited than he used to think they were. That sort of thing. I think he has changed. I think the novels have changed in that they have become more complicated and more interested in human interaction, I guess, and less interested in the more conventional forms of the hard-boiled private eye story.
I would assume also, since the Godwolf manuscript was your first, that your writing approach has changed somewhat, or perhaps your ability, your creative ability, has improved simply because of the experience of doing it. I only throw this out because I would have to take each of your books, I think, and compare them side by side to see if there has been any change. But
you perceive
any?
So would I. Well, I'd have to do the same thing, really. If you take the first and the last, there seems to be a smoothing of rough edges. I hope at least a deepening of his response to life. But book to book, you would probably find that the changes were relatively imperceptible. I'm at a loss to say in detail what the changes are because I haven't taken them and gone book to book and seen what I've done. One of the things that happens if one writes a novel, or at least one of the things that happened to me, why should I generalize about other writers? One of the things that happened to me is that as I wrote and published and began to get accepted, confidence developed, and I was more and more certain that the books that I wrote would be sold and read and received with reasonable critical acclaim. No one gets entire critical acclaim. I mean, everybody gets told that they're the worst writer since Harold Robbins. At the same time that someone else is telling them they're the greatest writer since Tolstoy, and it's probably a good idea because you can therefore get neither too depressed nor too exhilarated, and after a while you pay real little attention to either one. But I think that the fact that you know you're writing to an audience makes it easier to write, I think, than it was. For the first book I wrote, I didn't have it sold. No one encouraged me. I just sat down all by myself and churned out 2 pages a day, about 3 days a week for a year and a half, without any anything but my own self-confidence to sustain me. That's probably the hardest thing to do. Having done that, the rest gets easier and easier. And now I know, I have a reasonable expectation that a book I'm writing will eventually end up on the bestseller list, and I'll be here talking with you.
You have a serious character in Spencer, obviously. There have been some people who say, I don't like the idea of a serious character, like Robert Ludlum says that, although he did manage to bring in this last book a character by the name of Bourne back a second time. But he says, Robert Ludlum says, that he prefers not to use a serious character because he likes to start fresh to create new people. By the same token, Elmore Leonard claims not to have a serious character as such, although I think Ernest Stickley has been in a couple of the books, and yet each of his characters, his lead characters, are the same. I mean, they may have different names and heights and mustaches and things like that, but they're the same people. Now, is it possible...
I'm nodding, by the way, for the unseen audience out there. I'm going Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it possible to get bored using the same characters? You've got Hawk, and you've got Susan Silverman, you've got Spencer, and use them over and over, or do you think you might rather launch out on a new series character at some point?
No, I won't launch out on a new series. I may occasionally write a book about other people, not about Spencer. I have in the past about three times. And I will again now and then, though no one encourages me to. I mean, I have this goose laying a golden egg here, and nobody in the publishing world wants me to mess around with a chicken, you know, next door. But I will now and then, because sometimes I have stories to write that can't be about Spencer. Or maybe I'd like to try a third-person narrative point of view, you know, things like that, and I will. But not because I'm bored with the character. I get no more bored with Spencer, whom I have known for 12 years, than I am bored with Joan Parker, whom I have known for 36. The people who read about him don't seem to get bored, and there's no more reason for me to get bored with him than the readership. It seems to me that it's a good idea. I do think that if I tried writing detective stories starting fresh each time, I'd end up writing stories about the same kind of person with a different name. That doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Whereas if you deal with the same characters, you can keep at it until you get it right, or you can use their past to influence their future, much as happens in what we laughingly refer to as real life. I don't know why more people don't do it. I think that in fact, what happens is that writers do what they're comfortable doing and then defend it in public. I mean, the question of why I write a series character never comes up unless I'm being interviewed. And I have no answer for it except that people have asked me enough so that I've got one now. And I suspect that Dutch Leonard writes what he feels like writing. And then when reporters say, how come you do that? He comes up with an answer for it. Or Ludlum. The temptation to make a profound answer, I'd like to start fresh every time, is nearly irresistible. It's not entirely irresistible, because I resist it. But I understand how people fall into that sort of silliness.
What are the Judas Goats?
The Judas Goats are the Robert B. Parker Spencer fan club. I think they list themselves as a group of Parker Spencer aficionados. They're based in Boston, but they have membership all over the country, and I think, in fact, Hawaii is the country, but it's overseas country. I think Hawaii is their father's membership chapter. And they have a newsletter and T-shirts, and they have fundraisers and meetings and things like that. I don't discourage them.
No, I bet you don't. Can you tell the listener why they have a name, Judas Goats?
The Judas Goats named themselves after my fifth novel called The Judas Goat. Newsletter is called The Godwolf Manuscript, which they have named after my first novel. All of these friends are still available in paperback at your local bookseller. Very modest prices.
Now, do they have regular meetings, things like that?
I think they have regular meetings, yeah. I go about twice a year to their fundraising affairs, and we just had one in Cambridge a little while ago.
That may have been the one I read about in the newspaper, where they had menu selections from your book. Yeah. What did they serve?
I have no idea.
Well, didn't they serve
I didn't read the Times article, and I didn't eat at the thing. So.
You didn't eat there?
I was there, but I was I don't eat very much when I'm doing this sort of thing, and I have a sort of public presence, which includes going into a fog and you know, my book tour coma, as Joan calls it. So I really don't remember what they had there. They had, I do know they had music from the Spencer books, I believe, in Taming a Seahorse. Spencer's musing about the great groups of yore, the Ink Spots and the Ravens, and comparing them to the Beatles and where the Beatles fall short. And so they had the music at this affair was the Ink Spots and the Ravens. Some young woman wandered through and said, "Can't you do something about the music?" And I wanted to strangle her.
They have you speak?
When it's a format that's appropriate, this time it wasn't. If there's like a brunch and tables, I will come and say a few words and answer questions. But mostly Joan and I go and mingle. And this was a stand-up walkabout and buffet style. So, no, I didn't speak, but there were presentations. This was, I found very late in the day that that day was Robert B. Parker Day in Cambridge. Didn't even know it all day. I couldn't take advantage of it. And the mayor came and gave me a plaque. And
you probably could have ridden for free on the subway or the bus.
I could have done a lot of good stuff, yeah. But who knew, you know?
Yeah, or even park in a no parking zone without getting a ticket that day.
No, I don't think so. I've already tried that. They said no. It was largely honorary.
Spencer is quite a gourmet, or seems to be a gourmet, because food always appears in the book. You yourself are a gourmet, I assume, or at least a cook.
I can cook.
A food fancier.
I can cook and I can eat. I think that there's a certain implicit assumption that men who cook are gourmets and women who cook cook. For years, Joan worked and I was home, and when the boys were young, I cooked their supper. Anyone who cooks very much knows that it's not brain surgery, and so that if you can cook at all, you can cook pretty much whatever you feel like cooking. I like to cook as I like to do carpentry or make books or whatever, but neither John nor I cooks very much anymore because the boys are grown and gone, and we tend to eat out a lot.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
You had a kid in Sarah Lawrence a couple of years ago.
Yes, right? He graduated. Heavenly days. Daniel. Daniel is currently in New York. It's like the old story, you know, my son's an actor in New York, or really what restaurant? And he's got himself organized working in a restaurant and Betty Brown's Broadway Diner, Bleecker and Broadway. If you're in there, give him a big tip. And
how do we know which one he is?
Well, you go in, yes, for Dan. He looks like I would have 30 years ago. And he's looking for work as an actor. But he's supporting himself as a waiter. My older son, Dave, is also in New York, and he's a dancer and choreographer. And Kathy is his roommate. Significant other, Apostle Q. They had a show at Larry Richardson's Dance Gallery couple months ago, which went quite well. It was very successful. So he's working pretty regular.
Well, that's good. So you have more time for yourself than
without
the economic burden of raising children, which I'm fully aware of. Well, now, Chevy Chase played Fletch, and Burt Reynolds played Stick, and the character who plays Spencer on television, what's his actor's name?
Robert Urich.
He doesn't look right. He is too good-looking to be. He is too handsome to be.
It's a curse, isn't it? Yeah. They didn't cast me for the same reason. I always contend that Urich got the part because he won the Robert Parker look-alike contest. No one.
You should be so lucky. We should be so lucky.
It is also a great pleasure for me to frequently tell Bob that people at signing say, "Gee, Spencer should look more like you." And I like to tell him that people wish he looked more like me. He doesn't believe it, and I don't think anyone else does. Bob's good in the part. The show is good television, not necessarily the same as my books, nor should it be, nor can it be. I had approval on him, and if I had it to do over again, I would. I think he's not perhaps the Spencer of the books exactly. He's younger and less battered, but most stars of television series are younger and less battered. People that look more like me aren't starring in television series these days.
Well, I usually see the show. I have my earphones on and I'm hunched over my computer working. But my wife loves the Spencer series, and so she watches it on television as well. So I can see it back there, And it looks to me as though the scenes are pretty good. It looks to me it's set in Boston, isn't it?
It's all shot in Boston. Shot? Everything, even the interiors, yeah. It's all on location.
They all move up to Boston to do this
Everybody
on a permanent
comes to
basis?
Boston, yep. Bob's buying a house up there. The rest of the crew stays there the full year. They've been on hiatus since May 21st. They'll be back in, we're starting to shoot again August 4th. They'll all be back, yeah. Most of them stayed in a hotel last year. Some of them are, I think, Dick Jekyll's place, Quirk, is looking for a house now. Anyway, yeah, they're there. The whole crew, about 250 people.
That's great for Boston's economy, isn't
it? $1 million a week.
Wow, that's good. Do they have to? They don't have to pay off the police to get parking and streets cleared,
do they? No, everybody is very helpful and enthusiastic, particularly because it's new. If you're shooting in L.A., everybody's jaded and they don't want you running cables across their lawn. But in Boston, people are still excited. If we're on for 3 or 4 more years, they'll begin to dislike us a lot. But at the moment,
I doubt that. Do you have any role in the production at all?
Yeah, I'm a consultant. The primary duty of a consultant is to cash the check at the end of the month. But I read all the scripts. I make suggestions. I've spent, I don't know, probably a cumulative total of a couple of months in L.A. at the studio. I like to say that. I'm off to the studio, dear, working on story ideas and story conference and stuff like that. I get a lot of attention, as more probably than most writers do. Everyone seems very interested in what I want and how I like it and stuff, and they don't always listen. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, which is about right. I don't know how to make a television show.
So you do come up with story ideas for them, right?
Well, I don't think I originate many. I don't want to. But I'm there to read the treatments and say, I don't like this, I do like this, why don't we change this, why don't we get rid of this character and introduce this character, and sort of thing. I'm there, I'm the Abe Burrows of the show, you know, I'm the play doctor. I do some things with scripts. And I might write an episode or two this year. We'll see.
Well, to kind of wrap things up so you can go to another interview that I know you're just chomping at the bit to, to do
it. Let me say this all again.
Yeah, let's say. I read in some of the publicity material that was sent to me a couple of years ago, there was an article and it made a reference to something called the Code, the Robert B. Parker Code. What is the Code?
None of your business. I've always wanted to say that. I don't. I have no idea. The code has gotten out of hand, and it's
maybe you ought to scrap it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I ever had it. I don't know. Something you get in your nose in hay fever season. People. I think most people who have no exterior sources of support, who aren't religious or patriotic or belong to the Elks Club or whatever. Probably have to define some system by which they know what they should do and what they shouldn't. I'm quite devoted to my wife and sons. What's good for them is good for me, and what's bad for them is bad for me. And there's this German short-haired pointer named Pearl. But other than that, I don't know where I'd go with the code. I'm awful tired of it.
I don't blame you. Well, I'm delighted that that Spencer is now in the hands of a general public and not just the mystery buff. So, I mean, that's good for you, and it's good for everyone. And I enjoyed reading Taming of a Seahorse. It's not much different from the others. You have an awful lot of nice New York scenes and haunts and bogeys. I just had dinner.
State of mind. Did you really?
Yeah, I just had dinner at Bogeys deliberately. I met him, one of your fellow mystery writers down there. We sat and talked at Bogeys.
Warren Murphy, probably.
No, it was H. Paul Jeffers.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know Paul, but he writes. He's got a series character himself whose name escapes me, but it's set in the late 1930s. And
Jeffers will want to hang himself if this goes on the air now. Yes, he has a series character, and I can't remember.
Oh, well, I've done Jeffers twice on the air.
Oh,
so,
all right.
So he won't complete. Even if I forget it, you know, I still get him on the air. So he also does a lot of Sherlock Holmes stuff. He just sold a movie option for a book about Sherlock Holmes. Now, this is set currently, but what happens? Sherlock Holmes comes as a ghost out of the past to advise the hero about how to do cases. And so this was a nice little... He wrote two of these books about Sherlock Holmes reappearing. And so he just got that as a movie option, and he's praying that it might be a series or something like that.
One always hopes. Mike Lupica, your sports columnist in town, has a new book out, and The flap copy says, move over, Spencer, so...
Yeah, I've got to sit down and read that. I have that. I've been meaning to get around to it, and they called me and said, would you talk to him? And I said, yeah, I probably will, but I just got to get my mind in gear. And
it's an interesting, feisty, sharp
book. Did you read
it? Yeah.
Good book?
Yeah. I know Lopica, so I'm plugging him. But yeah, it's a good book. You ought to read it.
I will. I'll get to, right now I'm reading Edward R. Murrow biography that is that thick.
Yes, I know. I had to review Common Ground for the Chicago Tribune when it came out. And fortunately, it was so readable I couldn't put it down. I set out to skim it.
That was the Lucas?
The Lucas book.
Won the Pulitzer for
that,
didn't
they? Yeah. And they sent it to me late, and they said, can you get it in a week? And I said, yes. I said, well, I'll skim this thing. It's 700 pages. And I couldn't skim it. I found myself caught up in it. I read every word. Just got the review in. So I know the feeling of the big, wow book.
Well, Robert B. Parker, again, thank you very much. I know you're anxious to leave and talk to other people and answer the same questions. So, give you that chance. So have you back another year or so, and I'll ask the same questions.
Next, get
the same answers.
Couldn't I just mail it in, Bob?
Sure. What you could do is put it on tape. I could drag out. I do that, incidentally. I do. Usually I have summer rerun. Well, it's a little closer to summer. In your case, it'll be a winter rerun.
Yeah, yeah.
But I usually do midpoint, about 6 months later or so, 7 to 8 months later, I do some repeats.
Yeah, yeah.
The show goes five shows a
There's a company week. That's doing that now, that is doing videotapes of writers to send around instead of sending a writer. I saw that in the Publishers Weekly. I would think that would have a little less effect somehow.
Would think that very few people would want to use it.
Yeah,
it seems to me most people, the most stations, want to have their own interview. I wouldn't use somebody else's.
No, I wouldn't either if I were doing this. That would be sort of, what would I you'd become a disc jockey, essentially. All right, spin the tape, here's another interview.
Robert B. Parker, thanks a million.
Thank you, Bob.